What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, Fightful.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast. I welcome all of you and thank all of you for being here with me. We're going to talk the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. We're going to talk some backstage news, some contract updates, some stats, all that good stuff. But I know this was a big weekend. I know it's a trying time for a lot of you. And I want to say from the bottom of my heart, it means a lot that you all are here, that you all are still subscribing to FightfulSelect.com. I had someone ask if I'm still doing the Q&A because we dipped under 500. Yes, I am. I'm still going to do that. I'll have the Q&A form up Tuesday. I don't think that it'd be right to take Q&As away right now, so we're going to keep doing those for a while. Hope you guys enjoy it. We got lots to talk about, though. The Fightful Wrestling Weekly, and obviously WrestleMania was this weekend, and there are some notes out of there. I wasn't able to find out about why Triple H said that some unique things would happen to announce Braun Strowman getting into the Universal title match. I don't have an idea. I've not had a follow-up with anybody about that. I did hear that when Triple H was referencing things that may change the industry happening and may change the way that they happen moving forward, there were a lot of the elements that happened this weekend that he was referring to. I had people backstage in WWE when I asked about that saying, well, it's probably the Firefly Funhouse and the Boneyard match. It might be promos in front of nobody because they're seeing how effective they are, which we'll add a little bit later. But there were a lot of people very happy, very, very happy with how the Boneyard match and Firefly Funhouse ended up. There were a lot of wrestlers that had been reinvigorated and motivated by what we saw over those two nights and that want to participate in stuff like that. I had one that did say that it's a shame that it happened after Matt Hardy left, but then that same person said that Matt would probably like that it's at least happening and somebody will get to benefit from it. So that's pretty cool. Despite the risk of those who committed infractions of providing spoilers losing their jobs, many WWE sources said they were surprised no spoilers of any kind made their way out, because there were more people than expected on those sets, and nothing got out, and that's great. That's good news. But I know that putting spoilers out there was a job risk, and it should have been. WWE did the smart thing, and I, for one, am happy that no spoilers came out. I think it was a lot of fun. I didn't think about the virus for, like, one time during these shows, and that's awesome. I want to thank the performers and WWE for doing what they did. I don't agree with running the shows in this type of landscape, but you know what? It took my mind off of things. It's already in the can. There's nothing. I can't go back and change it now. So big shout out to them for that. Obviously, the outside the box element that a WWE source had reported to Fightful Select a few weeks ago was the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse, in case you couldn't tell. Several WWE sources just were very excited about that, and they should have been, because it all ended up pretty fun. There was a list of banned terms provided to some affiliated sponsors for social media this weekend by WWE. I'm working to get my hands on that, and I'll provide that to you guys whenever I do. The pre-show match commentary was done in post-production, I'm told. But other Raw notes, the word backstage after the Raw tapings was that Montez Ford, that spot resulted because he was supposed to be tripped. Austin Theory attempted to make the save but couldn't get up in time. The match continued, so they didn't end up doing another take, and Ford was said to have been fine after the spot. He worked this weekend. All was good. I didn't hear that he was mad or anything like that, but Austin Theory was received well among the few that were in attendance at the Performance Center, but a decision has not been made as to whether or not he'll be on the Raw roster full-time, at least as of last week. But that was also the same line of thinking that was applied to Angel Garza at first, based on what I'm told. So, who knows if we'll see Austin Theory continue up there. The Andrade rib injury, I'm told, was legit, and he was battling a rib injury. So, hopefully he gets well soon. We'll have more on that in the injury update. People that I spoke to seemed happy about the promo work, specifically the ones on Monday Night Raw. Edge, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens. Like, we've seen a lot of really great promos on there. And one member of the WWE staff said that the different pacing of things helps out, and the lack of crowd eliminates a distraction or a crowd reaction and has let some of the talent focus more than usual. Personally, I'm loving the method of the promos. If this does end up being one of the business-changing aspects that Triple H has discussed in his media tour over the last week, I think it'd be a good thing. There are some situations in which a crowd isn't needed. We don't necessarily need Kevin Owens to be out there in front of a crowd to cut a promo. He can look at the camera and do it just as well, if not better, than with or without a crowd. It really all depends on the content of the promo. So I hope that this situation has opened their eyes to this. And I mean, honestly, it took a situation like this to open their eyes to a lot of that. Speaking of backstage WWE notes, so you may have noticed there have been more pile driver-esque moves on WWE programming. Rey Mysterio and Andrade began prominently utilizing Canadian Destroyer pile drivers in their matches last year after years of really none on TV outside of the occasional tombstone. It was banned for well over a decade, I mean almost 20 years, but it's been given some wiggle room in recent months. But not everybody gets off so lightly. I was told months back that when Matt Riddle and Damian Priest did a Canadian Destroyer in NXT event, they were told not to again, especially without clearance. Well, in March, the Usos used an expanded second rope version of it that they called the Samoan Destroyer, or Corey Graves did. And this led to me reaching out to find out why or how these rules have been relaxed so much. And I asked around a lot. I'm like, are people pitching? Are you pitching? Or is somebody that you know pitching? And somebody told me that Kevin Owens brings it up fairly often, and that the package pile driver in particular is brought up pretty often, but it never makes it to Vince McMahon, although there was a pretty heavy pitch to get it on. I feel like it was Survivor Series or NXT, but it didn't end up happening. Now, there were also people, multiple people, that told me that if a move doesn't have pile driver in the name, it's more likely to get cleared. So that's why Canadian Destroyer might have gotten through. Just, and I mean, come on, we can't sit here and pretend that Vince McMahon doesn't know what a pile driver is. He knows what a damn pile driver is. He's called hundreds of them. So we can't sit here and pretend that he doesn't know what that is, but there have been wrestlers pitching to get this done, and WWE, to their credit, has been significantly more lenient about what they let their talent do. And I think it's awesome. Other WWE news, I spoke to Kofi Kingston, always a great interview. Big thanks to WWE for helping set that up. I spoke to him about some of his past WrestleMania seasons, his relationship with Vince McMahon, and the like. There was a story in Chris Jericho's book years ago that Kofi has never spoken on the record about, so I really wanted to talk to him about it. The story goes that Vince McMahon made a joke or a snide remark about Kofi Kingston not being over, and Jericho said, "Hey, Kofi, you got to go try to fight him." Kofi says that he got kicked off the plane because he didn't try to fight Vince, and then Jericho was like, "Hey, go back and do it," and Kofi did. And in the middle of Vince McMahon saying, "Oh, you sure you want to do this?" he shot a double leg takedown. I don't know who's more interesting, the Vince McMahon person or the character Mr. McMahon. Because the thing is, like, it's clear that Vince McMahon has a very unique sense of humor. And even though Mr. McMahon is this larger-than-life character and has this colorful personality, that's not something that Mr. McMahon would do on the show. He would think of something far more diabolical, and you always hear about Vince McMahon, like, trying some people in that regard. Kofi was, like, 28, and Vince was, like, I think 62 at the time. But Kofi says he applied a whizzer and stopped it and joked about it being on a plane with very narrow seats and aisles and all that. And he says that a referee in amateur wrestling would not have awarded Vince McMahon 2 points. But he's very gracious about the opportunities that Vince McMahon has provided him and the variety of situations he's been in and afforded over the past decade plus. Because Kofi was in a ladder match this past week. He's been in a Money in the Bank match. He's been in the Battle Royals, singles title matches, tag title matches, and he's hosted WrestleMania. And he says that he knows that a lot of people weren't keen on the idea of New Day hosting WrestleMania when they could have wrestled. But he said that he brought up the fact that he got the opportunity to do something that The Rock did and a couple others. And there aren't as many people that are afforded that same opportunity and get to have that on their resume. And he said that he's been very fortunate to have a really good relationship with Vince, and that Vince trusts him to do all that stuff and believes in him. And he went as far as to say that Vince McMahon was the driving force in keeping New Day together, which really puts things in perspective. A lot of people always hear about Vince jumping the gun on stuff or changing his mind. New Day has been a solid act for years at this point. Never wavered, never teased a breakup, never anything like that. And they're still together. Another one of Kofi Kingston's former tag team partners was CM Punk. It was clear that they had a pretty good friendship based on the content of CM Punk's old DVDs and stuff like that. But I asked Kofi Kingston if Punk kept in touch with him once he left. Kofi said they actually didn't, but he's happy that Punk is back on Fox and got to explore doing something he cared about. Spoke very highly of CM Punk, and I was particularly curious about this because I don't want to say Punk talked trash about everybody, because he didn't, but he always had positive things to say about Kofi, even about like their mishap in the Royal Rumble in Punk's last match. He said, "Love you, Kofi," and all that, and had very positive things to say about Kofi's title win and all that. Kofi had very nice things to say about CM Punk, too. So it's good to hear that relationship, even though they didn't keep in touch, it didn't necessarily erode in that regard. Punk is looked at as one of Kofi's brothers on the road, and they had done so much work and business together, and that's good to see. We have some AEW notes, as reported first on Fightful Select. AEW changed their method and actually taped content ahead of time. This was expected by the talent that were there. We're told that people from New York, California could not make it. North Carolina even couldn't make it to the show. So they had to kind of adjust things. And they filmed in Georgia. So it's good that they're getting this type of stuff in the can, and they're moving on from the weekly method. I would have loved if they could have kept going from Daily's Place and bringing people in, but it's just not safe right now. As for the report about authorities and all that stuff, it's nothing. There was nothing really there. It wouldn't have been a story if this wasn't happening right now. They were good to go. It was standard operating procedure. Was not standard operating procedure for Joe Exotic, as he had to change the name of NWA Texoma years ago. Now, I reached out to the NWA to see if they had any dealings with Joe Exotic, who's the subject of the new Tiger King documentary, which has gone crazy on Netflix. He helped run an NWA territory that was active when Billy Corgan and Dave Lagana purchased the company in 2017. He continued to promote it, but not under the NWA banner. And Dave Lagana had told me that he didn't have any personal dealings with Exotic that he could remember, but Tim Storm had. Tim Storm was the NWA champion at that point and was going around to these properties, especially in Texas, and defending the title. So I assume that prompted the YouTube video that they released last week with Tim Storm talking about that. This month is Indie Month on Fightful. I'm going to do these themed months here and there and give you guys some stories about certain subsets of wrestlers. This month is Indie Month. I had Eric Stevens feature an interview last week, which was obviously completed before he postponed his retirement. But this week, we have Josh Prohibition, who was on the cover of the Backyard Wrestling video game. We have Gregory Iron, who was endorsed by CM Punk some 10 years ago. Marino Tenaglia, who is a name you are going to know. He's an AIW Tag Team Champion. And then former GCW World Champion AJ Gray at the end of the month. Then next month's ECW month. But we had this Josh Prohibition talk. And I know that a lot of you might not realize exactly how much talent really came out of Cleveland, but we're talking like people of various sizes, shapes, styles, from Gargano, Ziggler, Miz, EC3. I'm pretty sure Shane Taylor, Crimson, Greg Iron, Wardlow, Marino Tenaglia, ones that are coming up, Matt Cross. There are a lot of people that came from that area, and it's something that Josh Prohibition kind of contributed to, the cold atmosphere, the mental patience you have to have as a Cleveland sports fan and resident as to why the area has such a high success rate with wrestlers, that they're maybe mentally stronger than a lot of people that you see in pro wrestling because they have to undergo a lot. I can tell you, as a born and bred Cincinnati, Lexington, everywhere in between type of guy, I've learned to hate Cleveland for years, but when I visited it, I loved the city. So I was like, man, it's not as bad as it's cracked up to be, but I agree with Prohibition's sentiments, and so did EC3 when I interviewed him recently. He said that he thought that was a pretty good button to hit on that subject. And working as a school teacher, Prohibition also serves as a trainer in Cleveland AIW, which is one of the hottest areas of pro wrestling prospects, as we mentioned. But he actually had to quit teaching at one point because other teachers thought he was a masochist. But then when one of his, I think his principal, saw old footage of him on a local station, he was like, oh my gosh, that's cool. Are you still doing that? And Prohibition was like, well, I thought I couldn't. And at some point he had thought about putting on a mask to work as well. But he said that being a wrestler helps him a lot as a teacher, and being a teacher helps him a lot as a trainer. It is a fascinating conversation. We talked about the backyard wrestling video game, which he said brought pros and cons because there was a stigma attached to himself and Matt Cross, who went on to become Son of Havoc in Lucha Underground and appeared on Tough Enough. But he said it also helped them step up their bookings as a result of the increased profile. He remembered the press tour for the game fondly and talked about Madman Pondo and Kevin Gill as he got paid and well taken care of and didn't have to risk his body that much on the press tour that IDOS set up. That was, however, quite the contrast from when they produced the cover of the video game. And if I encourage you to go check out the cover of that video game, they had to eventually Photoshop it together because there wasn't a safe way to take Matt Cross or to take a photo of Matt Cross putting Prohibition through a table because Josh Prohibition couldn't brace himself. They wanted the shot of him sprawled across the table. So they ended up finally welding the two together. And Prohibition knows that he and Matt Cross are forever linked due to that game, and he seemed okay with it too. Jimmy Van had a fantastic interview with Doug Stanhope of LJN. Now, if you all haven't seen it, Jimmy Van has the widest collection of LJN action figures in the world. In the world. Probably the most valuable, the widest, the most complete, all that stuff. Jimmy Van has, the questions that somebody like me who doesn't collect them and doesn't have that wide array of a collection could never have thought to ask. And he is an expert on this in himself. But if I called him Doug Stanhope, I meant Bill Stanhope. I think I've been doing that all week. The only Stanhope I had ever heard about was Doug Stanhope from The Man Show. But he indicated that the video games could have been a reason that the LJN figures got phased out. He said that color variants happened because people just ended up thinking they were supposed to be painted a different color in that factory. There were talks about Junkyard Dog's chain. He says the reason that the plastic was different, the chain was different colors, was just because it was whatever color plastic that particular factory had. Corporal Kirshner's figure had a full beard because they couldn't do stubble, and the clear beard was because the full one didn't look right. Then finally they put stubble on. Gorilla Monsoon specifically requested his own figure, which is why they ended up making one. And Sergeant Slaughter just ultimately put a better deal together elsewhere, and that's why he didn't end up having a figure, or at least a widely released one. Here are your injury updates. Andrade has a rib injury, so he has been sidelined. Rey Mysterio quarantining after an illness. We also have The Miz pulled from WrestleMania. We were not given any real reason why that happened, but he has been pulled. Fightful had reported Jessamyn Duke had double elbow surgery, but she confirmed that this week. Nick Jackson returned to wrestling action on Being the Elite of all places this week. Contract updates. Scott Dawson's contract is up this month. We have removed Jeff Cobb from the AEW contract section. It was said that he was working without a contract. I mean, obviously he was. But it was also said that he was there beyond Atlanta. But he has not appeared since then. So we have effectively removed him from the AEW section of the contract updates. Also, a bit of a Fightful report was confirmed last week. Kylie Rae has signed a long-term deal with Impact Wrestling. We had heard that she had come to an agreement, but we didn't hear that she had signed. Congratulations to Kylie Rae. I mean, a lot of people asked who's going to be the first person to jump from AEW. It's Kylie Rae. Kylie Rae jumped from AEW to Impact, of all places. Who saw that one coming? But good for her. She is going to be very good there. Time to hit you guys with some stats for the week. Zelina Vega has effectively brought up Andrade. Austin Theory and Angel Garza from NXT to Raw or SmackDown. Austin Theory, Brendan Vink, Caden Carter, and Shane Thorne have all made their WWE Raw debuts over the past couple of weeks. Kevin Owens picked up his third televised win of the year on Monday and his fourth on Saturday, which gives him a win in each month of the year, but only one win each month. Kevin Owens has been involved in 6 to 8 man tag matches with members of Seth Rollins' faction this year, 6 times alone. He's teamed with Street Profits, Samoa Joe, Viking Raiders, and Big Show along the way. Hikaru Shida has won 7 of her last 8 matches on AEW. Dexter Lumis won his first televised NXT match ever. And how about this? It was his first televised win on cable since a TNA win in March 2014. He's won on the internet, on iPay-per-view, and pay-per-view. Also, it's his first cable televised win via submission or pinfall since 2013, and that win was over the now Peter Avalon. Tony Schiavone has appeared for NWA, WCW, WWF, TNA, MLW, and AEW. Caden Carter and Shane Thorne and Brendan Vink appeared on Raw and NXT in the same week over the past month, and each one of them lost all of their matches. The Kabuki Warriors had their first televised tag title defense of the year this weekend. They'd only defended them on some live events. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross became the first two-time champions in the history of that tag title's iteration. Drew Gulak had his first WrestleMania match ever, and Cesaro had his first singles match, being one-on-one this weekend, although he did compete in singles action in a battle royal. Elias had his first pay-per-view singles match since losing to Roman Reigns in 10 seconds last May. His last before that was at Money in the Bank 2018. Barring some unforeseen title change on Monday Night Raw, Becky Lynch will hit one full year as Raw Women's Champion this week. She's the only woman in the modern brand split era to hold a Raw or SmackDown Women's title longer than 235 days. Her women's title reign is the longest on Raw or SmackDown since Trish Stratus between 2005 and 2006. And the thing about that, it was 448 days, but Trish Stratus was sidelined for about 150 of those days for 5 whole months. WrestleMania was Sami Zayn's first pay-per-view singles match since Bobby Lashley at Money in the Bank 2018. WrestleMania was the first in which Seth Rollins competed and didn't win a match. I know a lot of people are like, Rog. No, he got beat by Randy Orton, but he cashed in and won a title match later that night. Sunday was Natalya's first one-on-one match at WrestleMania, as well as Liv Morgan's. Every match at WrestleMania Natalya has been a part of has had at least 6 people in it. The Undertaker became the first man to ever main event WrestleMania across 4 decades. He's also won across 4 decades. The only other people that really have a possibility of making this happen are Shawn Michaels, who wrestled in 2018, but hasn't wrestled other than that in a decade, and The Rock, who has said that he has quietly retired. Triple H could compete across the multiple decades, as a lot of people could, but he didn't main event in the 90s. Shawn Michaels and The Rock did. Edge has appeared in WrestleMania events across 4 decades, but hasn't competed. He did not wrestle at WrestleMania 15. Goldberg versus Braun Strowman was the shortest match of Mania 36 at 2 minutes 10 seconds. Orton versus Edge at 36:35 was the longest. The NXT Women's Championship was defended at WrestleMania for the first time ever, and Charlotte Flair has walked into WrestleMania as Divas Champion and also competed for the WWE Women's, Raw Women's, SmackDown Women's, and NXT Women's Championships at WrestleMania. AJ Styles and Drew McIntyre were both first-time WrestleMania main eventers. For the second straight year, the Universal and WWE titles both changed hands. Edge is now 7-0 in last man standing matches and is 4-0 in televised ones. Former UFC fighters both lost title matches on each night of WrestleMania. Bobby Lashley, who fought in Strikeforce, also lost. Brock Lesnar has lost at 3 straight WrestleManias. WrestleMania dropped 3 50-year-olds in Triple H, Shane McMahon, and Kurt Angle from last year's card, but picked up 2 in Goldberg and The Undertaker, who didn't wrestle last year. Drew McIntyre picked up his second WrestleMania win in 5 matches. His first was a 12-man tag in 2012. Sasha Banks, however, 0-5 at WrestleMania, has never had a one-on-one match on the show. She has competed for a title at all but one of those shows, which was the first WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal. And then Braun Strowman finally won the Universal title. It was his 8th televised opportunity at that title. My God. Thank you guys for joining me. I've got exclusive news all week. I've got interviews all week. I got them all year. Thank you all so much. I appreciate all of you. Spread the word. Fightful Select. We're out.